Okay, today I'll be describing a complex permittivity model that we've been using in the field over the past year. And instead of just describing this model in detail, I'm going to look at some of the implications of using this model. And before I begin, I'd like to thank the organizers for the kind invitation, and also recognize my co-author Steve Evett and Jordan Bell, who contributed quite a bit to this study. And TDR measured permittivity to estimate water content has been largely successful except in fine textured soils. And permittivities in these types of soils with large amounts of active clays tend to have strong temperature and bulk EC dependencies. And if you look at it in detail, you'll find that the degree and the direction of these sensitivities can depend on the cabling, the instrumentation, and the water content. And this has resulted in some empirical calibrations not really giving very good results, especially when you calibrate it in the laboratory and then take it into the field where you have different cable lengths and different ranges of temperatures potentially. And what we've usually seen is an overestimation of water content near saturation. So in general, what we've seen with these empirical calibrations, or the problems with these empirical calibrations, are first that they don't consider the losses or attenuation due to bulk EC and polarization. Secondly, they assume all water in the soil systems behaves as free water, and they ignore the frequency and temperature dependencies. And we can bracket all of this, and pretty much a lot of this is due to us ignoring the interaction of minerals with water, or the mineral surfaces with the water. So the objectives of this presentation are first to briefly describe the permittivity model, and if you need more detail, I'll refer you to the manuscripts we just published. Secondly, I'd like to go into a little more detail about the implications for soil water content sensing under several conditions, for example, under advancing solute front and under non-isothermal conditions. And lastly, I'd like to briefly describe some of the field applications or of how we've applied this in the field and some challenges and opportunities with EM sensors in general. We first begin with a physically based model. We consider the plane wave propagation lossy media, which depends of the propagation factor, and of course we're assuming near TEM mode propagation, and this depends on the attenuation coefficient and the phase coefficient, which is a function of the propagation velocity. And the tangent delta is just the loss tangent, or the loss in current divided by the charging current. And lastly, apparent permittivity is also a function of the phase coefficient, and this is what we measure, or actually we measure the travel time in TDR. So I'll be primarily talking about the apparent permittivity and the attenuation coefficient. And we can rewrite apparent permittivity using these equations as follows. And it's obviously a function of volumetric water content. It's also a function of temperature, effective angular frequency, soil bulk density, and mineralogy, which is primarily a result of the surface area of the minerals. And these effects are all contained within the real and imaginary parts of soil permittivity, and in a non-trivial way. And what we've done, we've combined these effects into a complex dielectric mixing model. And in this case, we've used the power law model. And here, air and mineral permittivities are assumed to be real valued. Free and water permittivities are complex. And what we've done differently here is we've separated out the apparent DC conductivity by itself from the mixing model. And this is not a problem with TDR. We can get a very good estimate of apparent DC conductivity using TDR. We do not consider interfacial polarization in this model, but this is primarily important at frequencies less than 100 megahertz, and which is usually below the TDR frequency range, unless you have very long cables. This results in a complex permittivity model of the soil. The advantages of this model, of course, you have the real and the imaginary components. The advantage is it only uses a single fitted parameter in this case, the specific surface area of the soil. We note that the direction and the magnitude of temperature responses varies with frequency and water content. And here I've outlined the blue and the red, the different, two different temperatures. And also note permittivity is frequency dependent. Because of this frequency dependency, we need some estimate of an effective frequency. And what we've done, we've approximated effective frequency using a closed form solution. And I'll refer you to the manuscript for that. But this is called omega sub r, is the notation I've used. And this is a function of the attenuation, which we've approximated here. And p is a polarization loss factor, which is a function of water content and frequency. So once we've calculated our effective frequency, omega sub r, it's inserted into the apparent permittivity equation to complete the process. So some of the attributes of this model, besides measuring apparent permittivity or travel time, we need to measure soil temperature, bulk EC, bulk density, and the signal bandwidth at the end of the cable, just before it enters the probe handle. And by now, if you've been following, obviously it requires an iterative solution. And in the calibrations that we've done, we fitted specific surface area, the polarization loss factor, and we actually fixed the power law exponent. So we had two fitting parameters. And we did this over a range of water contents at three temperatures and three cable lengths. And the cable lengths are all used to adjust the signal bandwidth at the end of the cable. So this is one of the calibration results for Richfield BT Horizon in Tribune, Kansas. I've just plotted the apparent permittivity in the y-axis, the volumetric water content on the x-axis, and you see the fitted and the measured results. Note that we've measured water content here and we're predicting permittivity or apparent permittivity. So if we ignore bound water, we tend to overestimate permittivity. If we ignore bulk EC, we tend to underestimate permittivity. We need to consider the as a signal propagates through cables and interconnects, we need to consider the loss of bandwidth. And this can be quite considerable, even with very good cables. And for instance, for the Tektronix 1502C, we start out at 1.75 gigahertz, and we can have a loss in bandwidth down to 426 megahertz after 9 meters of cable. Ignoring these types of losses in bandwidth, and essentially a decline in an effective frequency of measurement, has led to some errors in the past. And let me go back. There we go. What we've done was we use this as an input into the bandwidth at the end of the cable as an input into the model. So this is the same type of fit of apparent permittivity versus volumetric water content. The only difference is we've used a very lossy cable. Now the bandwidth at the end of the cable is 127 megahertz. Notice the higher permittivities that we get from this, measured and predicted, compared to the light green band, which is with the shorter cable or the cable that was less lossy. So ignoring this bandwidth decline in cables can lead to considerable errors. Besides attenuation in cables, we need to consider attenuation during signal propagation along the probe, and this can be caused by polarization of free and bound water, and also bulk EC effects. And we can calculate this using the attenuation coefficient and our fitted parameters. So this is what we've done here. We've calculated it for free water polarization. There's only free water in the soil in this case. Bound water polarization, all the water in the soil is bound water, and also for bulk EC losses. The first thing I want you to notice that is that the Groundwater polarization dominates this frequency-dependent attenuation in soils. So at high frequencies, we have a large attenuation, and we filter out these higher frequencies. For bulk EC, we note that there's very little frequency dependence here. We attenuate the signal at the same amount no matter where we are in the spectrum. So we can go further and use our calculations to calculate our model to calculate the frequency downshift from 600 megahertz to for each of these processes. So for bulk EC losses, we only reduce the effective frequency down to 562 megahertz. For bound water polarization, we can have a reduction down all the way down to 153 megahertz. Now, if you can keep that information in mind, to demonstrate this, the interaction between polarization and permittivity in these fine textured soils, we carried out a breakthrough experiment, and in a column that we packed, it has a probe inserted into the middle, a TDR probe, horizontally. So what we're doing is just measuring bulk EC with time, and we're measuring it. We end up with a nice breakthrough curve here, and we also measure permittivity with that TDR probe, the red dots. Now, given our measured bulk EC, and we also measured the water content, which is saturated, temperature, bulk density, and the bandwidth at the end of the cable, we can predict our permittivity, which is the black line here for this soil. So it matches fairly well. We can also reverse this process and use the permittivity that we've measured and predict water content shown in the green dots. Notice our predicted water content doesn't vary much with the changes in bulk EC. And of course, this is what we want. We have a saturated water content the entire time, so we shouldn't expect any changes in water content. And I'd like to add that these are predictions, they're not fits. We used our previous column calibration for this soil, the fits of that calibration in this simulation exercise, or the simulation parts of this exercise. So let's take this out in the field a little bit. In the field, we need to measure or calibrate the model for different soil horizons, but also we need to characterize the setup of the cabling setup of the system. And so, of course, you need to measure the air and the short circuit reflection coefficient to obtain your bulk EC, and also the bandwidth at the end of the cable. And notice, if you can see these numbers for each of the multiplexers, they're all very similar, and we use all the same cable lengths for these multiplexers. So that's a good verification of your setup. This is one example of applying this model for field data. And first, you note that we've lost a lot of the oscillations associated with temperature in this model compared to, for instance, the TOPS equation. A second thing I'd like you to notice is our estimated water content is about 35% compared to about 40% for TOPS equation. And this agrees much better with our neutron probe measurements. And if a first approximation, if we compare neutron probe measurements with our predicted water contents, we're getting a difference about 1 to 2%. Again, zoom up a little bit more. We're showing the removal of temperature-induced oscillations. And the nice thing about this is you can see changes in water content using this model, they're very difficult to see in these when you have these oscillations in the empirical calibration. So we can see our precipitation inputs quite much more easily using the model. Now, if we zoom up really close, we see we still, in many cases near the surface, we still have this diurnal oscillation of our estimated water contents. And this here, it's somewhat disturbing. but the amplitude of this is only 0.3% water content. We also modeled this using Hydrus. The phase is shifted about 4 hours later, so I'm still somewhat uncertain what's causing this. I think it's partly due to the measurement, but it may be a portion of it may be due to actual changes in water content in the soil. To summarize, with fine textured soils, we can do it best with a measurement accuracy of about 2 to 3%. It's what we've been finding. I just like to emphasize that the strong polarization increases the sensitivity, apparent permittivity to bulk EC. And this is effective, the declining bandwidth or effective frequency of measurement. And one problem with these fine textured soils is the identification of the end reflection and enhance the travel time. And I think this is a large source of errors for these measurements. And we need to be careful in the interpretation of electromagnetic water content sense data in the presence of textural changes, whether it be vertical or horizontal spatial variability. And we can avoid confounding clay content with water content using soil-specific calibrations. And I just like to add that parameters of physically based models are more easily adapted to incorporate this type of spatial variability. And this is borne out by our study with our soils that we've looked at. This is a correlation of the fitted surface area with soil properties that we've measured for these soils. And note the correlation coefficients are quite high. Even for clay content, it's about 95%. And there's still a lot of uncertainties in dielectric phenomena related to soil minerals. The distribution of relaxation times and weathered clays is still not very well characterized, especially when you have mixed mineralogy. And lastly, interfacial polarization and the related dielectric enhancement is really a problem for frequencies below 100 megahertz. And with that, thank you for your attention. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them, or if we have time.
Thank you, Robert. And thank you for leaving plenty of time for questions. So do we have
I
any
did.
Questions in the audience? Raise your hands high because
Tim?
I can't see you very well.
Tim. Yeah, Robert, I'm a little just confused by the low water contents you're measuring in a clay. Could you explain that 0.05 and that's
the
high clay content as well?
There, it's very near the surface. We have drying near the surface. So we're measuring 4 or 5% water content near the surface. And that's pretty good estimation. If we actually use an empirical empirical calibration equation, TOPS equation would tend to underestimate. It would get to zero or below zero.
So very high matrix potential.
Very high matrix potential. And what you saw there for Hydrus was just vapor transport and diffusive vapor transport. We're not seeing any liquid transport there.
Kind of question of what is good enough? What would you say would be good enough in terms of the water content?
In terms of the air, the measurement air, it would be nice to get it down below 1%, but based on my work with fine textured soils,